The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm a compulsive overeater. In a continued effort to lighten up, I want to talk to you today about abstinence, God, and a movie, while focusing on the heart of recovery. I've been coming to OA since November 22, 2001. My current abstinence date is July 28, 2002. Today is March 22, 2014. And we are here at the St. Louis OA Convention. I've been abstaining from compulsive overeating for 11 years. I used to weigh at least 437 pounds and have a 66-inch waist. This month I weighed in at 168 pounds and I wear pants with a 36-inch waist. These quotes from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous speak to my recovery in OA. I substitute in my mind food for alcohol and compulsive overeating for alcoholism. See if there's any identification for you in these. Page 11. This is the third edition of the Big Book. Page 11. Here was something at work in the human heart, which had done the impossible. Page 55. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Page 73. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. Page 75. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Page 107. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Page 143. He should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. Page 305, my broken home and my broken heart fanned my smoldering self-pity into a fair-sized bonfire, and this kept me well supplied with reasons for having another drink and then another. Page 312, I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of inner freedom. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and need never return again. It talks about joy in that quote, and one of the definitions I've heard of joy that I really like is calm delight. I need more calm delight in my life. Page 346. I would investigate Alcoholics Anonymous from a medical standpoint. Deep in my heart was the feeling that maybe I could get some help here. Page 384. I wish I could tell you how and why AA works, but I don't know. I only know that it does if you desire it with your whole heart and without reservation. Page 403. Even then, I knew in my heart that I was unfit for the very things I wanted most. A happy marriage, security, a home, and love. Page 476. When he speak from heart, big men cry. Page 534. Edna St. Vincent Millay's verse, pity me the heart that is slow to learn what the quick mind sees at every turn. Page 70. Helping others quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. Page 111. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Page 43, something that I could have said in my mirror. People like you are too heartbreaking. Page 151. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. Page 23. Some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do. I think I'm a compulsive overeater. It's like the story in the Big Book where the woman keeps guessing, well, it's because I had an abusive marriage. No, that's not why you're an alcoholic. Well, it's because, you know, I grew up blind, or, you know, I had this problem. He's like, no, that's not why. You drink because you're an alcoholic, and I overate because I'm a compulsive overeater. There is no other reason. And the reasons for the illness are unimportant, according to our invitation to you. What is important is that we found a solution. Page 25, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Page 161, being wrecked in the same vessel, being restored and united under one God, with hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, the things which matter so much to some people no longer signify much to them. Page 246, yet we all had one really sincere purpose in our hearts, and it was not to drink. Page 529, we are really human beings, and we welcome you with open arms and hearts. So that's the end of my quotes from the Big Book, but how many times does the word heart come up? And those are the ones that speak directly to me. Now, may I ask how many people might not have been here last night? Okay. I'm passing around my pictures again. If you saw them last night, please leave them for someone else. These are my wedding rings. I'm not going to share all the visuals. If we have time later, and maybe I'll take a group conscience because it does take several minutes to haul them all out. But these are my wedding rings, one from 1982, when I was married, the day of my wedding, and I'm still married to the same woman. And this ring, which I had made years later, that I got too big for. So I sent the pictures down this way, I'll send the rings this way, they tend to go faster. And I do need them back. Oh, another thing I want to offer, we still have these handouts, these pamphlets here. I know they're selling some pamphlets. I don't want to cut into the Bi-State Intergroup profits because they're selling pamphlets in the other room, but these are extra ones I have. If you don't use them and you'd rather purchase them, I totally understand. I'll take whatever's not used. In this folder, it has my full name, Christopher B., because this was from another convention, but there's paper in here. If anyone wants to write themselves a letter, either from their higher power or a self-forgiveness letter that I heard about in the last session, or any type of thing, some type of encouragement thing that you would like to get at some undefined time in the future, you need to address one of these envelopes, and I only have so many, so it's first come, first served. I'll put them up here too. And put your name and address neatly spelled out, because it's going to come like that to you in the mail, as if you were addressing this envelope. I will send it to you at some time in the future when my higher power says send those things now, and I will put a stamp on it. You don't need to put a stamp on it, but I will send it to you. I won't look at what's in there, but if you leave it open and I see that it's open, I will find a Lifeline article I've printed out and hopefully add that to that as a service. Now, you may get it a year from now, you may get it next week. I don't know. So it's up to you if you want to get a letter. Like, mine might say, Chris, don't you know I love you? That job situation you've got, that's not worth overeating over. Because by the time I get it, I'd probably laugh because it would not be an issue then. Or I could say, you know, your family misses you or people care about you. Get over it, Chris, you know, or whatever. Something to kind of nudge you along in the direction that you'd like to go, ideally. So I'll put those over here. Okay. I didn't see an Ask It basket out there. If there were questions, I don't know where they're... Oh, okay. I don't know if there's... Are there questions in there? Okay, great. Okay, so I was going to address those first, just in case, because if someone has a question on their mind, I'd rather address it. If we have time at the end of this and you have a question for me, something I've brought up or something I haven't mentioned that you're like, why didn't he talk about that? You know, let's address it now, because someone else may have the same question, and you might not be here for the evening session or tomorrow, so I'd like to do that if I can. It's not that I know much, It's just I'm sharing my experience. If there's strength and hope in there, you'll see it. I don't have to tell you. It's there. Okay? The following phrases are from The Wizard of Oz, a 1939 Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer film. Ironic that the film was released the same year the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was published. At the beginning of the film, it says, this story has given faithful service to the young at heart, and time has been powerless to put its kindly philosophy out of fashion. To those of you who have been faithful to it in return, and to the young in heart, we dedicate this picture. The first line is, "She isn't coming yet, Toto. Did she hurt you? We'll go tell Uncle Henry and Auntie Em," which is like sponsorship, isn't it? Huck says, "You ain't using your head about Miss Gulch. Think you didn't have any brains at all." That's what excess food did to me. It made me act like I had no brains at all. One person suggests about Miss Gulch that Dorothy should spit in her eye. Sounds like advice giving, what we try to stay away from. Right before Dorothy sings one of the most famous songs ever sung, she says, "A place where there isn't any trouble." When we go over the rainbow in this program as we journey, we're rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence which we had not even dreamed. Page 25 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Toto can be seen as an equivalent symbol for abstinence. She goes just about everywhere with that dog, her most prized possession. Toto is a living thing, just as our abstinence is. We can carry it with us. The carnival man says about his vision of Auntie M in the crystal ball, "Someone has broken her heart." Haven't many of us had our hearts broken? I have. This disease broke my heart. Then the tornado comes. I used to be the tornado. Page 82, roaring my way through the lives of others. Hearts were broken. Then the movie switches from black and white, her old ideas, to color. A new and foreign way to live, which is progress. She had to learn it for herself, just as we get to learn it for ourselves in this program. We don't have to learn it. We get to learn it. She sees some strange things in Oz and realizes, "I know we're not in Kansas anymore." How? Well, she's never heard of a beautiful witch before. There are people who can help us, and they do things differently. They can be strange, and that situation can be strange. The main characters had what they were looking for all along and display it throughout the movie before the wizard actually gives it to them. For isn't it true that we find the great reality deep within us? Hearts will never be practical until they can be made unbreakable, the wizard says. A heart is not judged by how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others. Dorothy says, as the wizard is doling out gifts, "I don't think there's anything in that black bag for me." In other words, didn't many of us think, as I thought, that program wouldn't work for me? I'm different. You know, they don't know me. These people can't relate, for whatever reason. Following the yellow brick road is like following the 12-step program we're all members of. It twists, it turns. So how does our higher power fit into all this? Well, some could see the ruby slippers as a power greater than themselves. Or the wizard himself. After all, even though he is viewed as a higher power, and he certainly is not God, doesn't he have an uncanny ability to show people their true selves? I shared with someone last night that I've had ruby slippers moments. And you know, those ruby slippers kind of protect Dorothy. And we all know what happens, anyone who's seen the film, when the witch tries to get that from her. The symbol of her higher power. She cannot compete with that. She says those slippers will never come off as long as you're alive. So she's always been under the protection, since she's been wearing those, of basically a version of her higher power. I'm not aggrandizing them, I'm just using them as a simple symbol, a simple symbol, to get across the analogy that I'm trying to make, that this program is universal. And I need concrete examples to apply it in my life. Otherwise, it's too much out there and undefined. Sometimes I have ruby slippers moments where I try to deal with someone else's ruby slippers and I get that same, you know, because I have no business doing that. Dorothy works with others and everyone benefits. They sponsor each other. They're willing to go to any length to get to see the wizard. The Wicked Witch of the West, Miss Gulch, can be viewed as our disease. Mean, ugly, ugly, powerful as well. Notice how she says, "I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too." She not only wants to control Dorothy, but Toto. Again, recall Toto can be viewed as a symbol of abstinence as well. Dorothy says, "We've come such a long way already." To which the witch responds, "Long? You call that long? Why, you've just begun." And at 11 years of abstinence, I feel I have just begun. I'm 54 years old. That's still just a fraction of my life. The witch goes on to say, "Helping the little lady along, eh? Well, stay away from her. Our disease wants us alone. Isolation is where I went to practice my disease." She taunts the scarecrow. "Wanna play ball? How about a little fire, scarecrow?" When we play ball with the disease, we get burned, don't we? It's really playing with fire. At the end, each person who has been on the journey gets to tell what they were like, what happened, and what they're like now. However brief, much briefer than me. Over the rainbow. This is a we program, and I need help from you, especially today in a few minutes. Thank you all for joining. I didn't know everyone was going to join in with the hearts comments, but I really appreciate that. The word amateur has a hard time of it over the years. I'm an amateur. I admit it. That word comes from the Latin root, amo, amas, amat, which means to love. An amateur is someone who does something for the love of it. That's me. So picture it. 1939. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is published for the first time. 1939, Gone with the Wind is released. As I shared earlier, that same year, the film The Wizard of Oz was released. It starts, as many of us know, in black and white, an appropriate metaphor for how many of us used to live our lives. Some of us are people of extremes. Black and white. The Wizard of Oz. Then Dorothy travels over the rainbow to Oz, where all is in color and vibrant, though not always pleasant. Another metaphor for our lives in recovery. So much is available to us in recovery, and we get to choose. Sometimes, since my chooser is broken, I either choose too many things on that spiritual smorgasbord, or I make suboptimal selections. Things that's not a good use of my time. I need to watch that. Over the Rainbow is the only song in that film that occurs during the black and white portion of the movie. But its theme of having dreams come true applies directly to us, as abstaining members of Overeaters Anonymous. A piece of trivia about this song: although it lasts only 2 minutes and 14 seconds, after a preview of the film, it was cut from the movie as it was felt that it slowed the picture down. The persistence of the associate producer and Judy Garland's vocal coach and mentor to keep the song in the picture paid off. It has since been recognized as the number one or greatest song of the last century by at least three different nationally recognized institutions. Please forgive the mention of lemon drops in the lyrics. I don't want to trigger anybody. To be sure, the song offers us hope. Hope that our own lives can soar beyond our wildest dreams. No, we're not bluebirds, but we are learning to fly with the help of our higher power in a way we could not have known before. Dorothy says at the end, as she looks back on her journey, I remember that some of it wasn't very nice, but most of it was beautiful. I don't have this down here, but I'm going to tell you, I shared a little bit last night. Some of my journey has not been very nice. It breaks my heart that I'm still here and that I don't do things in a way that I think God would prefer. But because some of it was not very nice doesn't mean that most of it wasn't beautiful. Just the same, all I kept saying, she says, was I want to go home, and they sent me home. The others in her room chuckle at her, and she disregards their laughter, saying, anyway, Toto, we're home. Home. And this is my room. And I'm not going to leave here ever, ever again. Because I love you all. And oh, Auntie M, there's no place like home. OA is a home for many of us. My wish is that our skies continue to be blue, and when the storm comes, which it will, remember it'll pass. We had a beautiful weather day yesterday. Those front doors opened at the hotel just now, and wow, March came in like a lion. Our dreams, I wish that they continue to come true for us, however quickly or slowly, that we dare to dream dreams that our higher power wants for us. Because if all of you can work this program, why, oh why, can't I? For those who care to, please join me in singing Over the Rainbow. Let's see if we're queued up here.
I don't know what this goes like. Here we go.
knows what I have prepared. What I'm going to do is just open it up and just kind of be flexible here. Does anybody have any questions about anything I've shared on, or something you want to know about my life or the way I work program in certain situations? Someone else might have the same question. I could repeat the question into the microphone. Yes. We just had a sponsorship workshop. How do I sponsor? I use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went through the steps, I used the OA workbook in tandem with that, the OA 12 and 12 and the AA 12 and 12. And then I work directly with my sponsor. That's how I encourage people to do it. But I'm open to anything that works for them. My goal, my bottom line goal in sponsorship, is to help someone find what works for them, even if it's different from what works for me. One example, because a lot of people say, you know, if I'm your sponsor and I have what you want, you'll do what I do. I don't do that. I don't tell anybody what to do. My sponsor does not weigh and measure, but I tend to weigh and measure most everything. For her, that's the insanity, the exactness. For me, I have ranges of food items that work for me, and I've weighed about the same for about 10 years. It does fluctuate a few pounds here and there, but I don't head in one direction month after month after month or the other direction. So that's the physical recovery. Emotionally and spiritually, I need to have someone I trust and get honest with them about that. If I can't trust that person, I'm with the wrong sponsor. How do I trust somebody? Because a lot of people ask me that. I trust somebody with a little thing, and I see how that goes. And I trust them with something else a little bit more. I see how that goes. I didn't always do that. Sometimes I overtrusted because I'm an oversharer, one of my defects of character. And then I got burned because some people were untrustworthy, like I was most of my life. I told people here last night I have a defect of character of gossiping that I try not to practice now. But if you get in with someone that you're trusting and they are still into gossiping, it's going to get out there. The example I use is take a feather pillow, go up on a roof, cut into it, watch those feathers fly everywhere, and then go back the next week and say, okay, I'm going to start picking up all the feathers. You can't do it. Once it's out, that's it. So there's got to be an inherent trust there. The only way I won't work with someone is if they interfere with my own recovery, and that has happened twice. Once because the person got so angry with me that they weren't making any progress, although they weren't doing anything. I don't fire people, but I thought the person was going to hit me. And I thought, I don't know that this is working. And then they ended it in anger. The other person was demanding that I give them assignments. I told them that I don't do that, but I could make suggestions. Well, you know, I would suggest doing this. And they'd write on a question or something. Okay, next question, please. Well, that was interfering with my recovery because then I had a pressure of, you know, I've got to give them a question, otherwise they can't work the program. You know, I'm not that powerful. Like I said, I had that problem with my Toyota Prius yesterday. If I were to go to PetSmart and say, you know, I'm getting this check engine light, can you look at it? I'm going to the wrong source. They don't have what I want. You know, and I used an example with someone yesterday. Not everyone in OA, although we're all working the same program, we work it a little differently. It's the same 12 steps, but we work it a little differently. Not everyone's a good fit. If you walk into a store and you go over to the men's section and you buy an 11 and a half dress black men's shoe and you try to walk around in it, it may not work. You may not be able to journey very far without either getting a blister or tripping or having a problem moving along because it's not a good fit. If I walk into the women's section and I buy a size 7 maroon pump, it's going to be a problem because there's nothing really wrong with my foot or that shoe. It's just not a good fit. So that's my overview of sponsorship. Anything else?
I noticed in the pictures that you had lost a lot of weight before your OA days. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. In my pictures, it shows I had lost a lot of weight before my OA days. Last night I had shared I had done many things before OA. And if you're interested in those, I would take it outside the meeting and tell you what I did and what did not last. If you're interested in what has lasted 11 years and 7 months now, it is Overeaters Anonymous, the 12 steps program of Overeaters Anonymous. There is no other solution. Now, everything supports that. Yes, I have a food plan. It's a commercial food plan that I don't endorse or oppose out of respect for Tradition 10. So if you want to know how to lose weight and gain it back so that your head spins around twice as fast, I've got a lot of experience with that. But you saw I lost weight, and I was more insane than ever. I hated myself so much when I was close to this weight and still overeating and then going out and running 8 miles. Nobody's had lunch yet, so you know I can share that. Yes, I abused laxatives, and it's not good to do that before an 8 mile run because you lose a pair of shorts that way. Yes. Okay, let me just check. Did that answer your question about sponsorship,
yes,
basically? And did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. So how do I navigate when I have dinner at a friend's house or, you know, a wedding or some other thing where I need to eat in front of someone? I did this recently. I brought my own food, and my sister-in-law, we so rarely get to see you eat. It was like the gateway arch in front of them, you know, right there at the table. So, wow, that is an amazing, that's a monument. Chris is eating something, you know. I eat during the day. I eat. I've eaten already today. Otherwise, I would definitely be a crazy person waiting for my time to eat. But I generally don't eat food other people have prepared unless I'm sure it's like a plain salad if I have a business lunch. I'll bring a foil pack of tuna and put that on the top. I think I might have shared on this yesterday, I'm not sure. That'll be my protein on top of there. I can bring a starch that works for me because I can't usually get that at a restaurant. But I usually clear with the server that it is totally, you know, water, fresh greens or something like that. And then I make them repeat back to me the ingredients of what they're going to give me in the salad. I don't eat anything they've cooked. You know, it's very lightly grilled with only a little bit. No, it's not. Because if abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception, then why am I turning it over to a chef at some restaurant? I don't turn it over to OA banquet preparers. I'm not eating the dinner tonight. I brought my food. It's not an option. It's not to take away from the quota that they need to meet here. It's just my abstinence comes before people pleasing at the Bi-State Convention in St. Louis of OA, you know, or the Holiday Inn on Butler Hill Road. I just don't put it before that. When I go to see friends, I need to make the decision all the time. Do they want to see me or do they want to see me eat? Because if they want to see me eat, they need to come around when that's occurring. If we're going to a restaurant, I can get a glass of water. It makes it very easy to pay my portion of the bill. I can also, you know, offer a tip. Often they say, well, you didn't have anything, you know. Well, I'm willing to chip in for the tip. I mean, we were served by the... No, no, we got it, you know. Okay. It's the offer. Look at the difference between... Did everyone know the difference between giving and offering? It's confusing, isn't it? Some people are confused by that. But this came up, you know, it's like when I'm with friends, I need to be sure I'm offering and not giving. Giving implies pressure. Watch this with this lady. Would you help me out?
Sure.
Could you stand up here? Thank you. Audience participation. If I give her something, there's an implied pressure that she takes it. Now watch if I offer it to her. Then she gets to... whether she wants it or not. That's the very essence of sponsorship and what we're trying to do here. It hangs suspended. And look at the step three prayer. A lot of people say, I give my will and my life over to your care. That's not what it says. God, I
offer myself.
That means you're just putting it out there. If God wants to, as I heard in the sponsorship thing, we're like newspaper delivery people, if you throw the newspaper, it's God who's got to come out on the porch, you know, because I've given it to him, offered it to him on his porch. I've made the decision to turn it over. He's got to come out on the doorstep and say, yes, I'm interested. God is always interested in us when we want him enough. Big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So yeah, I don't generally do that. I went to New Hampshire on business last week. I've done other things. I generally bring my own food. Or if worse comes to worse and they don't have anything, I'll eat later. I ask for someone to give me... May I please get a ride to the nearest grocery store so my needs can be met? People are more than willing to help me out. I don't want to be the needy one or the one who needs help. I want to be the one giving help. But when I give help, how many people like to offer their help to someone and just, you know, if someone's in need, you know, you give them a hand and, you know, it's like, could you take the dog out? Could you, you know, whatever. Yeah, a lot of people like to do that. How many people like to ask for help like that? Just a very simple little thing. Okay, we got a few. But most people don't. They just don't. I need to keep getting better with that. Does that answer the question?
So, like, what will you say if someone asks you, oh, why do you blame you? Or
oh.
What are your responses that you give them?
Well, I've had all sorts of things that I've said, but generally what I say is, well, I used to weigh 437 pounds and I don't want to go back there again. It's a conversation starter. Because usually most people's response are four words. You're kidding me, right? Said, actually, I'm not. And that's when they know I'm not. And I don't need to say anything else. If they want to know more, they know where I'm at. Some people are very curious. I said, well, you know, if they keep pushing it, then I'll just say, you know, I go to Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step spiritual program. It's not for everybody, but it's the only thing that's worked for me. And then I stop talking. That's the key. If they want to know more, they'll ask. If people have questions here for me now, they'll ask. If you don't, or you want to see me in the hall and you have something private, I'm open. I talked with some people last night. That's fine. But someone else may have this very question. Well, how am I going to do this? I can't get abstinent now. It's March. Easter's coming up. And then we have 4th of July. And we always... Well, no. I used to always. Phrasing is important. Because if I say we always and we're going to... The thing is, I don't know. People ask me, are you going to that St. Louis convention, you know, I plan to. That was my plan. But I am not in my right mind going to tell anybody, yes, I'm going to the St. Louis OA convention. Yes, I made the commitment. But watch this, another play on words, and this guy is particular with words, as I told you. What's the difference between making a commitment and honoring a commitment?
Action.
A spiritual program of action. We need to back it up with something we're doing. So I just do things. You know, I abstain. I'll abstain right in front of you. If they put something on my plate that doesn't work, once I ordered a salad and came out with caramelized walnuts. I don't think so. I'm not touching that. I consider that a sugary dessert item. Anything that glistens like that and has caramelized, that word alone is a problem. So does that make sense? Okay. Anybody else? Yes. Do I have a daily spiritual practice? At the very minimum, I try to write a thank you God list rather than writing IWIWD, I wish I were dead. I put TYG, thank you God. And usually I write, it's almost like road, I write abstinence and Overeaters Anonymous. Sometimes I'll write, I could write, like today, STL. Okay. I could write another member's name or initials, anything. Nice weather, you know, anything that I'm grateful for. But I usually put at least abstinence and OA in, and at least twice a day I get down on my knees, bedside, anything related to bed. So getting up in the morning, going to bed at night, taking a nap, I try to pray before and after the bed ritual, whatever it is done. And I usually combine steps 1, 2, 3, and 11 in this way. God, thank you for the abstinence you've given me. Before I even start asking for anything or start praying formalized prayers, I heard once that if the only prayer I ever said was thank you, that would be enough. So thank you for the abstinence you've given me. And of course, there's no expectation that he's going to keep giving it to me. I recognize that God-given abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. Then I say, so thank you for the abstinence you've given me. I am powerless over food. My life was unmanageable. I came to believe you could restore me to sanity, so I offer my will and my life over to your care. All I ask is that you let me know what it is you want me to do so I can do it. I'm praying about that with this job situation. I'm praying about that with like what I share here at the St. Louis Convention. If what I'm saying is helping you, then I think God's working through me. If it's not, then maybe it's my self-will. Like, you know, I want to get through the stuff that I put some time into and prepared, you know, and this is what I think is God's will. And sometimes I'm not the best at recognizing God's will. But my spiritual practice, in this thing, I wrote God on page one. God. You know, and I'm like, and the second to last page, God. You know, and the wizard is not God. And, you know, I try to bring God in more consciously. Not constantly, but consciously. That's basically my spiritual practice. And when my connection is not very good, I will sit in the car and I will beat on the steering wheel. Sometimes I'll use bad words, which I generally don't like to use. And I'll say, what the is going on here, God? I have no connection to you, and I'm thinking I'm the one who's moved around a bit. And I don't like that. But I don't have to bloody myself because my connection is suboptimal. That very talking to God is helping. And what do we say when we talk to God, the OA 12 and 12? We say whatever we feel like saying. And I have felt like saying a bunch of things. And I just say them. I got that kind of higher power where I'm not going to get struck down by a lightning bolt or whatever. He's not like that. Does that answer it? Okay, any other? Well, if anybody has any questions and you spot me in the hall, that's fine. My phone number and my email contact and even my street address and my full name is on my pictures if you want it, so that's fine. We're at 11:37, so I think it's okay to end a little bit early. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.